Welcome to Money Talk with MFLN Personal Finance. This podcast series offers brief recaps of our recent online professional development webinars targeted at personal finance managers and extension educators who work with military service members. I'm Molly Herndon, Program Coordinator for the Personal Finance Team, and I'm joined by Money Talk herself, Dr. Barbara O'Neill. Dr. O'Neill is a distinguished professor in the School of Environmental and Biological Sciences at Rutgers University and is the Rutgers Cooperative Extension Specialist in Financial Resource Management. Hi, Dr. O'Neill. How are you?
I'm fine, Molly. Thanks.
Good. Let's talk a bit about the Gender and Finances webinar. This webinar has discussed external impacts that affect women's earnings. Can you talk about them?
Well, there are a number of external impacts that affect what women earn. Among them are the college degree and occupational choices that women make and the pay that is associated with different careers. And then we've got documented pay gaps by gender in the labor force, pay negotiation ability, your ability to ask for a raise and to actually get one and to negotiate when you have a new job and you're talking salary. Other issues, a desire for shorter hours and schedule flexibility in career choices. Gender discrimination and bias, if not outright misogyny, which is a very strong prejudice against women. And then another factor is family schedules and caregiving responsibilities, and that could be care for both young children and older parents. Some of the research that was presented in the webinar talks about the fact that having children is a key factor affecting women's earnings, and that there is a documented motherhood penalty that occurs when women have children. And actually, they've also found a fatherhood bonus when men have children. Go figure. I guess one possible reason is that it's very difficult to do what Sheryl Sandberg calls leaning in at work, which often leads to promotions and increased pay and higher job titles and that sort of thing. When you're raising a family, it's kind of hard to do that leaning in. And I guess, that's something to remember each year on Mother's Day, that many mothers not only have made substantial sacrifices in non-economic ways raising their families, but in many cases there's also been a financial sacrifice as well.
Absolutely. Research tells us that women are typically more risk averse than men. How can financial educators and practitioners work with women to help them maximize their investments?
Well, I think it all comes down to financial education and possibly some financial coaching as well. Nobody is born with innate investment knowledge, so people have to learn about this. So I think it's really important to teach female clients about the historical performance of different asset classes over time, things like stocks and bonds and cash equivalent assets. And there's great data from Ibbotson Morningstar that shows the average return on different types of investments going back to 1926. Also, I think it's important to show people the potential loss of purchasing power that accompanies cash equivalent assets. So if you're getting less than 1% on a savings account in the bank and inflation is averaging, let's say, 2.5%, you're losing about 2% a year in purchasing power. So people need to be shown that as well, not just the general principle, but actual dollars and cents. I think even beyond that, though, beyond the numbers and the history and all the, statistics that you can throw at people, I think the important thing is to just listen to a woman's fears and address them, whatever those fears might be. And then also encouraging automated investing and regular deposits at regular time intervals. So something like having 3% of your pay come out of your paycheck and go into, let's say, a 401k plan, or having $50 every first of the month go from your checking account to a mutual fund. If you kind of set things up automatically like that, it reduces the emotions that are associated with investing during volatile markets. So, you know, right now with the trade situation with China, we're in a very volatile stock market and, you know, kind of up and down with the indices. If you have something locked in automatically, your investment deposits are going to be made regardless of what happens in the market. And you'll actually get more shares when share prices are down than you will when prices are up. And then when those share prices go back and regain value, you'll have more shares to do so.
Mm-hmm. That's good advice. What are some of the other differences between men and women's financial behavior?
Okay, well, in addition to everything that I've mentioned previously, like investment risk tolerance and, you know, income inequality types of issues, I think it's important just to keep in mind that women, on average, live longer than men and they earn less than men. So basically, you have a situation where you have to stretch a smaller amount of earnings over a longer period of time. So that speaks to the necessity to take action to address this. And it might mean something like working a little bit longer than you had planned originally to have more years of savings and fewer years of withdrawals. It might mean becoming a little bit more aggressive in your investment risk asset allocation. So things like that, that people just need to be aware of that, you know, again, you're going to have to stretch less money over a longer period of time. Also, women tend to be more severely impacted financially than men by life events. So things like divorce and widowhood, again, because they're usually earning less when you separate two spouses, a woman is going to be living on less income. So that has all sorts of implications. And then, as I mentioned previously, women are more likely than men to have gaps in their employment history, which will affect their retirement savings, their Social Security benefits, and their future lifestyle as an older person, age 65 plus.
Yeah. What are poverty rates are high for older women? How can women protect themselves in their retirement years?
Well, first of all, you know, given all the data that we've shared already about differences in earnings and labor force participation rates, it shouldn't really come as a surprise that older women are much more likely to live in poverty than older men. So the best protection that a woman can have against poverty in old age is strategies that build her financial resilience. So there's a lot of things that can fall into this category, including having adequate life insurance on their husband's life, so that if he predeceases her, she'll have some insurance benefits that can help sustain her lifestyle. Having no or minimal employment history gaps. So, for example, perhaps instead of staying home for a number of years and being out of the labor force completely, maybe a woman can consider some part-time employment that she can do at home and still maintain a Social Security contribution, and also just stay current in her field, which becomes important too if you re-enter the labor force after being out after a period of time. So that's important. Another thing is to have a long-term care plan. And this doesn't have to mean insurance, but it could. So a long-term care plan can include insurance or self-insurance, or to have some type of annuitized income, meaning purchasing an annuity, or if you're lucky enough to have a defined benefit pension, you will have money coming in monthly that can help pay the monthly nursing home bill, for example, or assisted living if you need to pay that. And then, as I mentioned before, working a few years longer than planned, so maybe age 68 versus age 65, can also have many positive financial effects, and it will stretch out your retirement savings for a longer period of time.
Okay. What are some other financial protections that financial educators and practitioners should discuss with female clients and students?
Well, I thought of five that might come into play here. First of all, number one is household cash flow. So just being honest about needs and wants and personal spending patterns and helping women make adjustments to their household income and expenses as needed. In other words, you want to have your clients avoid living above their means. Number two is take a look at a client's net worth. With the possible exception of an income tax return, there is probably no other document that's as enlightening about an individual or household's current financial status as a net worth statement, because you're looking at the assets and debts. So that should be something that should be looked at. Number three would be investment preferences. So we've already talked about the fact that women tend to be a little bit more conservative. You probably will want to have them complete one or more investment risk tolerance assessments. And then from there, you can develop what's called an investment policy statement, or IPS, that is just simply a document that describes a person's investment risk tolerance and their goals, and kind of outlines a strategy as to how they might do an asset allocation or a division among their money of different percentages in stocks, bonds, and cash, for example. Number four would be to prepare a woman to be a widow or a divorcee. And I know this sounds a little morbid, but the odds are that a female client will probably be the last spouse standing. So to avoid the fallout that comes with that, the financial fallout, encourage a female client to maintain her earning ability, to obtain adequate insurance and spousal pension benefits if available, and to familiarize themselves with the specifics of family finances and the content and location of key financial documents in case you have to find these in a hurry. And then I guess the last thing I would just mention for financial practitioners who are working with female clients and students is just view everything through the lens of a female to the extent that you can. So just thinking about the challenges and characteristics that we've mentioned previously in this podcast. In other words, and I kind of do this, no pun intended, but I realize that you could take it that way. Many women do love buying shoes. What you want to try to do is walk in the shoes of a female client and make any information or advice that you give them relevant and realistic for their lives.
Okay, that's wonderful. Thank you so much.
You're quite welcome.
Thank you for listening today. You can find this recording and archived episodes of the Money Talk podcast, as well as an upcoming calendar of professional development events, blog posts targeted at military service providers, and more on our website at militaryfamilieslearningnetwork.org.